Over the past couple of years, we've had several opportunities to talk with members of Hawaii's thriving improv community, and it's clear that improv has come into its own. Locally and nationally, it's become a kind of performance art that doesn't always have to be funny. No community can thrive in isolation, though, and improv guru Mike Brown is back in Hawaii to share some of what he's learned touring the country. He's with us this morning.
Hey, well, thanks. I was about to say welcome, but yeah, thank you for joining me today.
Nobody ever says welcome to me, Mike.
Chris, I'm so glad that you could join me here today.
I feel good about
my program, The Conversation.
I feel good about being able to share this with you. Improv is moving beyond comedy. Fair to say?
Oh, 1,000% over. Yeah, it's one of the big things that one of our own gurus, Del Close, would say is that he would always talk about how he would much rather have a scene be interesting than funny. If you can make it really about something. And I think that's kind of where the theater community is going nowadays. You walk into an audition for anything, Broadway play, off-Broadway play, you know, television commercial, television show, movies, film, whatever. Casting directors and directors themselves are looking for people with improv experience. You know, can you read a script, internalize it, really know what it's about, and then be able to improvise from there? You know, what happens if you're live on stage in a Broadway show or off-Broadway show or whatever, and someone flubs their line, you know, are you going to be able to correct yourself? Can you pick yourself back up? So it's a marketable tool in the theater community as opposed to just, you know, comedy.
There's a great scene in that movie, The Dresser, where the King Lear is supposed to be on stage and he's late, mm-hmm. and they're all running around going, "Methinks the king cometh." You know, they're improvising in Shakespearean dialogue to cover that hole, right?
Exactly, yeah. And it's fun to see, and especially when it's done masterfully, people really pick up the pieces. You can't tell. You know, it's like a really good tailor. You know there's a seam there,
yeah.
but you can't really see the seam.
And that's true of just about anything that you're trying to do well, right?
Exactly. It's the concept of 10,000 hours. You know, you do anything for 10,000 hours, you become a master at it.
Well, how does an improv artist spend those 10,000 hours off stage?
I watch a lot of TV.
Uh-huh.
You know, if that's your craft, you really have to study it. As trite as it might be to say, television and film watching really is our medium. That's how you learn.
Sure.
You learn by watching other people. So, you know, it's one thing to say, oh, I'm doing my homework, and, you know, you're watching, you know, episodes of Breaking Bad or whatever. But
I Love Lucy, yeah.
Of course. Oh, my goodness. I could spend hours talking about Lucy, but yeah.
Well, those are the great comedians of past generations, people like Jack Benny,
mm-hmm.
have a really ongoing legacy, don't they?
Of course. They're never going to die.
Yeah.
Yeah. Groucho Marx, Harpo Marx is one of my all-time favorite comedians, Charlie Chaplin. You know, these were guys that they used vaudeville in improv. They improvised in their vaudeville acts to be able to refine and hone a routine and get it down the way they need it to be.
And the way you mentioned Harpo was clearly an improv artist, because the greatness of Harpo is that thing of, is he going to teeter right off the edge?
Mm-hmm.
You know, should there be kind of almost an element of danger? You're a little bit worried for the guy on stage. Is he going to be able to hold on to this bubble?
And I think that's the connection that I specifically have with Harpo, is that he is such a recluse, and you don't know, like, you don't know what he's going to do next. I love that feeling of danger. I love that feeling of you know, how is this going to fit in? How is it going to tie in? Is he going to go over the edge? And if he is, how is he going to bring it back? You know, at the end of the day, your scene work definitely has to make sense and relatable to your audience. And, you know, not everyone is as relatable to Harpo. You know, he's the id,
yeah.
To put it in Freudian terms.
The unfettered side of us, right?
Yeah.
No
yeah,
boundaries.
Just the pure, raw energy. You know, he was always after food, women, and music, I think, were his.
Not
like,
necessarily in that order.
Not necessarily in that order, of course.
But to create that feeling of danger, to sort of bring it with you on stage, you've got to deal with things that you yourself are uneasy about, right? You've got to deal with, you've got to be afraid in a sense.
Every single time I take the stage, I want to spill my guts. Yeah. You know, I get so terrified and so nervous. But as soon as I get on stage, it's just like all that melts away. And I specialize in a very specific type of improv, which is solo improv. And that is, I just wanted to go off the wall, just get as crazy as I can get. And it all started as a dare. Some friends of mine were walking down the street in New York. We're going to go to an open jam improv session. Someone says, hey, would any one of us consider doing a solo improv set by ourselves? And I said, of course, I'll try it. You know,
where you create characters that react to one another, right?
The way I create my scene work is that I do have multiple characters within the context of the same scene, even though there's only one improviser portraying those characters.
Right.
Some people, I've seen other solo artists jump back and forth between characters line for line. I find that that tends to be a little bit manic, and the audience can't relate to it as well. I like to just remain one character and talk to a phantom character.
Oh, I see.
And whatever the phantom character says back to me, now my job as an improviser is to react in a way that lets the audience know, hey, this is exactly what that other character said. So
your answers have to indicate that.
Exactly.
Kind of the Shelley Berman, Bob Newhart telephone routines, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's fun and it's silly and it's inventive and in that type of medium, you can really play around with a lot of innuendo. You can play around with a lot of callbacks and just, you know, anything creative that, you know, that you can have fun with that you can't see. Anything that you can't see. I mean, that's why people love scary movies.
Sure.
Is because, like, the phantom character, you can't see it. You know, that's the scariest thing. Or in comedic terms, that's the funniest thing.
We want to be taken beyond where we are at the moment.
Heightened, right? Form of reality.
Yeah. We want some kind of, so exaggeration needs to be very much a part of what you do.
Heightening, exaggeration, repetition. And there's a structure, again, created by Del Close and Sharna Halpern from Second City, formerly Improv Olympic, now IO. But they created a form called the Herald. And so the Herald is built in a way that you specifically have to call back certain scenes. And in doing that, you can't just play the same scene over again. You have to find a way to heighten it and to make the stakes bigger and better. Because if they're not, it's just going to be, you know, repetition, same thing. Okay, we already saw that. Let's what else can you do?
It sounds like a really great field to be in, Mike. Thanks very much for coming on the show this morning.
Thank you so very much for having me. I really appreciate
it. It's good to have you. Mike Brown is a performance artist, studied at the People's Improv Theater and the Magnet Theater in New York, has taught improv at Oxford University, University of California at Berkeley, performing tomorrow night at the Ongking Arts Center, downtown Honolulu, and giving a workshop Saturday afternoon at the Loading Zone. To find out more, you can go on our website, hpr2.org.